Deep thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Today we're going to talk about human interaction. I'm actually surprised it took me this long to come up with this subject matter because it's something that we're all talking about a lot. And I think there's a lot more to it than we really get into in conversations. So you're sitting around talking to someone, and the older you are, the more the conversation starts and becomes very easy to have, which is that with all the social media that we have out there, we tend to grow content with electronic communication. For a lot of us, we remember time before social media. Now, if you live in a small town, you don't really need this lesson. You don't, because you hang out with human beings. Oh, you might have your Instagram or whatever, but you might, in a small town, what happens is you post something, then you go down to the local restaurant or local bar or local hangout, and you go, did you see what I posted? You call them up on the phone, did you see what I posted? In the big city, you post, and then you only know if someone saw it if they liked your little thing. Before we go too far down this whole thing, imagine the fact that the populace that controls the elections in this country, the United States of America, if they got rid of the Electoral College, for instance, you have the West Coast and the East Coast determines all of the policies for pretty much 90% of the rest of this country's geographical population. And they're the ones that are strung out, not talking to each other. They don't know who their neighbors are. They're terrified of the universe. And they're going to pass laws. They're going to rain down upon communities in the Midwest that have their shit together, socially speaking. I just want to throw that out there before I lose the point, right? But I've mentioned a couple times in season one, in season two. I don't know if I've done this in season three. I think I have. The sheer importance of human interaction. Now, let's back up here and go for the two different theories of how we got here on this planet. There's technically a third. But you have your evolutionists, and you have your creationists, your intelligent design people. I personally think we were very intelligently designed. And sometimes there's a mezzanine in the middle, which is we're intelligently designed, but we're designed by aliens, right? Doesn't really solve the problem of where the hell they came from. It's still kind of a passive evolutionary model. But regardless of what you believe about where we came from, there's one thing that you cannot solve with social media and electronic communication with other people over direct interaction with other human beings. In no way did evolution intend for man to be communicating like this. Meaning, all of the systems that we would have developed through evolution were not meant to be isolated. If you're evolutionist, what do you believe? You believe that Homo sapiens split off from hominid, but they still exist, right? Monkeys still exist, but we evolved from monkeys, right? It's one of the greatest bullshit connections there. But let's just go with that really remedial theory, okay? Everything that is similar to us, as related to us by evolutionists, they are pack animals. Chimpanzees all hang out together. Man, they can't stop touching each other. Every form of every monkey and ape, primate, is constantly grooming each other. Okay. If you believe that God created us, well, I don't think we have to go too much further in that conversation. I don't think God is going to, you know, what's funny is if you manage to manifest some sort of definition of heaven beyond, you know, the symbolicness of it, you know, sit around and eat cake all day or whatever, do whatever you want. Can you imagine heaven just being a big app? Well, there's an app for that. What do you mean? Well, you get to heaven and there's just, you get this really cool iPhone that never loses a charge. It's really fast. There's no more progress bars. If you want to talk to someone else in heaven, well, you just launch the heaven app. That's all it's on the phone. It's just the heaven app. And you can just post and share and ba ba ba. You get little cupids instead of hearts. It sounds pretty stupid, doesn't it? It sounds stupid because no creator in the universe would ever create a society, a civilization, or a species that would be intended to be away from each other. How have we survived in the history of the world? Have you ever read a story about the one man that created this whole civilization all by himself? The one guy that built the whole fortress or the city, or the one guy that spawned the one person, which was still himself, to keep society going, to keep mankind going? No. Nope. So he's got to be a guy and a girl. And they copulate. She gets pregnant. And that's how they keep it going. There's no other combination. Sorry, everybody else. That's just the way it's been. Okay. Now, did Mr. Caveman play a Sam Cooke album and get his woman all wet? Nah, probably not. Probably more like that cartoon where he bangs her on the head and goes for it. Such a horrible thing. When I was a kid, that visual was in everything. Caveman hits a girl on the head and drags her off by her hair. Yeah. First, as soon as you hit her on the head, she's fucking dead or brain damaged, and that's pretty much the end of that. But I have this example I give. It's not even an analogy. It's an example that I give. And when I am able to give it in a really good scenario where people are listening, there's not a lot of cross chatter, there's not too much noise, it's an intimate setting, and I have a conversation with someone. A lot of times I've done this with couples. You see it on their face when I give this example, because instantaneously they know I'm correct. And instantaneously I see them taking inventory of their investment in social media. Sometimes I see alarm on their face of like, oh shit, he's right. I think I need to re-engineer my life back to the way it was before the internet created social media. And the example goes like this. We first get into the conversation about how important it is to have human interaction and how wonderful it feels. And they agree with me, looking at me, they're smiling, okay, good. And then I tell them, I say, look, if I bought you a 16K television, it's only 50 inch, so it's really dense. It has the most perfect whites and the perfect blacks. And I surround you with an Atmos Dolby sound system. It's going to hit you from every single angle. You're going to feel like you're wherever the source microphones are. It's perfect. And I sit you down for a Skype session with your loved one of all loved ones. And you guys talk. You can see them photographically. You can hear them like they're in the room. They drop a pin over here and you hear it fall over here. It won't shake a stick towards being in the same room with them, staring at each other 2 feet away on a sofa, saying absolutely nothing. The human body knows the difference between reality and facsimile. Because when we're together, there's a hell of a lot more going on between human beings than just sight and sound, touch and taste. There is an amazing emotional arc between us as human beings. And it is the way we are built. It is the way we're supposed to be together. It feeds us socially. It feeds us spiritually. Haven't you ever had a hug? And you would swear to God that there was some machine hooked to your chest, and the second your chest touches their chest, you have this amazing feeling. It's this rewarding sensation of being with another human being. And sometimes you can say, well, if it's your lover, man, it's like on 10. Especially if you haven't seen them in a while, or you've just had a super bad day, and you hug them, and you literally touch chests. It's this nuclear bomb of amazing feeling. How's that for mixing metaphors? You ever going to get that from a Skype session? From a Google Hangout? The feeling can be likened to replenishing your soul, as if their cup is filling your cup, and vice versa, if you're with the right person. I've told this story a couple times, and I learned this the hard way. When I moved to California in 1987, it was a very sobering thing for me. I came here the 19th. It was 10 days before my birthday. In August, and I spent my 18th birthday in this room I was renting reading Stephen King's Misery. I wasn't on work that day. My buddy comes home from work and realizes it's my birthday, and then I never had to tell anyone it was my birthday in my entire life. And I had just spent the day, you know, reading this very macabre novel, which was about a guy isolated. He's being tortured by this lady, and it's, you know, something else, a great book. So he grabs me, and we go out and grab some food, hang out. But this went on and on, and here I am in a place I want to be. I am succeeding beyond my wildest dreams, and I'm succeeding at a pace that's insane. Just, I wouldn't say falling uphill, because I work my ass off, but everything was going right. And everything continued going right for years and years. But it was not until probably about June the next year, 1988. So count up the months. It was about 10 months, right? My friend that I was renting a room with at the time, he was running across the hallway out of Moorpark, California. He goes, you want to see my buddy's music studio? Because he saw me with all my music equipment. I said, hell yeah, I want to see it. He said, okay. He said, meet me here. And it was his church group. And so he suckered me into a church to get to this studio. It was fine with me. It was an awesome church, awesome people. Now, full disclosure, the dude who owned the studio ended up getting busted for pedophilia 2 years after I left. Spent 2 years in prison. Prior to that, he got his PhD at Pepperdine University and was a Bible instructor. You know, wow, right? But the key of the story is that I went to this church. And I went one time, and then I went to the studio, and it was cool. And he gave me, you know, he said, you know, you can rent time for me. I said, great. So I started writing my first real pro stuff, you know. And then I think it was the second or third visit I'm there. And, you know, when a newcomer arrives at a church, you never know if they're ever going to come back, you know. And I was definitely like this nomadic kid. I had no parents, no friends. I was just there. I was working literally down the street. And they, you know, I figured out what I was doing. And they're like, wow, that's, you sure? How old are you? What's, you know, did you go to college? What's going on here? So when I came back, one of the elders who I ended up living with later on, his family, big guy, size of my dad, probably about 6'2 or so. Just an unbelievable soul. To this day, still the same way. But he takes one look at me and he's like, oh, you're back. And he reaches his arm around me. He gives him this big hug, like a, you know, big dad hug, you know. And my body, I don't know how you describe it. It was about every emotion you could possibly have. And I had visited home for probably Christmas that year. I saw my family. He gives me this big bear hug. And my body just electrified. that somebody was touching me. And I come from a really huggy, you know, lovey family. And you walk in, you hug, you kiss, and you sit down, and then you eat your whatever, lunch, dinner, breakfast, whatever. At least the grandmothers were that way. And I realized at that point, way before the internet got HTTP protocol and web pages and social media, that that's an extremely important thing that we must preserve and incubate. Where else have we seen this become a very important thing? Well, for those of you in America, you're definitely familiar with our prison system. Or maybe you're not. Let me make sure you understand. In America, there's something called a jail. A jail is where you go before you get sentenced. A prison is where you go after you get sentenced. You get credit for time you spent in jail waiting for your sentence. But when you're in jail, you have what's called segregation or admin, ADSEG, which could be administrative segregation, or the hole is what they call it too. There's different levels. Administration segregation is a little bit lighter. They let you have a little more stuff in the room, and it depends on what state you're in. It depends on what prison you're in. It depends on what jail you're in. But when you cause problems, they put you away for an attitude correction. Now, the good news is that this country is reforming some of those standards because it's become pretty inhumane. Too much time away from other human beings with absolutely no way to stimulate the mind. Of course, they're trying to sway the behaviors of some of these people, and it does work, boy. It cracks the toughest of the tough. They go in saying, you know, it's like the Breakfast Club thing. He's like, 2 weeks. Oh, so, okay, 3 weeks. Who cares? You know, 4 weeks, you know. Man, the hole cleans people up. I've seen it. You know, watch Netflix Lockup, man. You'll see these guys educate you. There's so much to be learned by the show Lockup. I mean, it's just nuts. These guys go in. You see what they do with their lives. You see how they correct themselves. You see how they keep themselves screwed up. Some of them get arrested. Some of them die. It's a lot of wisdom in there. But what ends up happening, and we all know what happens, and again, European prisons are a lot more humane from what I've seen. Now, third world prisons are all over the map, right? We just don't know what you're getting into when you get put in jail or prison in a foreign country, which means behave, okay? But what ends up happening is someone might go in for 6 months and end up getting 100 years because they don't know how to behave. They're only in there for 6 months, so they take liberties with their behavior, they get put in the hole, then they start turning into a monster. If they don't sanction their brains and keep their wits about them, they become monsters in prison. And then they go back out into general population and they commit a horrible crime, which gets them the 100 years. I watched an episode the other day. A guy went in for 4 years. Within the 4 years, okay, but you wouldn't have served the entire four the way it works in America. If you're a good guy in prison, you treat everybody with respect, you don't cause any problems, you can get out in as short as a year and a half with probation. But no, this guy goes in for 4 years and gets himself 142. Participated in prison riots, which got police officers injured, some of them critically, inmates getting killed. I mean, it was horrible. Part of the genesis of his behavior was isolation. Now, what's interesting about this experiment, and I mention this analogy from time to time, but it's actually a thing that you do. What happens when you get a new piece of electronic equipment or a new piece of software? What you end up doing, if you got a knob or a slider, and you're not quite sure what it does. You're playing around in some, I don't know, you're in some effects package on your computer, some After Effects thing, or you got a knob on a machine. You'll take it and you'll crank it all the way to one side and then crank it back, and you try to watch what's happening. Oh, wow, the flame got a lot bigger. Now I know how to work a gas oven. Don't want to do that randomly, right? But that's how we figure out how things work. When we look at the people in prison on these shows, we're looking at people who slam the knob to 10 and get themselves 142 years on top of a 4-year sentence. Well, what are we doing with our life. You're saying, well, that, I don't know why you're mentioning that. I'm not in prison. I'm not in a jail cell. I'll never do anything to get into that. Yeah, okay. I believe you. I do. Well, let's think about it. If we can see what happens to a human being who slams it to 10 and gets themselves 142 years, what happens to us slowly over time if we simply feed ourselves the poison of isolation without interaction, without physical touch, slowly? It gets worse and worse and worse. We become more and more isolated. Now, when I say this, I'm not saying you shouldn't be comfortable in your own skin. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be able to be at home by yourself and totally enjoy that. That's a euphoric state. It really is, when you can be your own person. I find that in history of my own life, the more that I can be totally happy at home and sit there for 10 hours just cleaning up the house, working, doing my emails, doing creative stuff, that's when I meet the most interesting people in my life. Because I'm interesting, because I've worked on myself, I feel really confident. If I walk into a room, I'm totally centered. That's when I meet someone. It's interesting. When you have someone at home that you see all the time, that's when you actually become more of a couch potato. And there's nothing wrong with that, because you have built a life out of your family, your spouse, your kids, whatever. Now think about this scenario. This is totally fictitious, but maybe there's some truth to it as well. Now, let's say a university somewhere out there in the truth world does a little, I don't know, analysis on social media, on isolation. And they start tracking health issues related to isolation as a result of social media. They not only study adults, which is most likely where they would go, but they'll also study kids. They study the elderly. Maybe sometimes when you have absolutely nothing, that interaction on the phone is actually positive for you. For a child who needs to develop interpersonal skills, perhaps it is totally debilitating for you. For an adult, it just depends. Where are you in life? There might be this weird gradient. But what if there was a fairly giant demographic, maybe a 30-year span, a three-decade span, let's say from 30 to 60, but they came back and said the fatality rate and suicide rate of people engaged in massive social media and zero interaction with other human beings results in death. They go to their doctors, they get on antidepressants, the antidepressants completely shut down all their normal chemical manufacturing in their brain, then they try to get off the drug and they go nuts, they hurt themselves, they hurt somebody else. What if this came out in the press and you could read an article from sources that you trust? Would you change your life at all in terms of social media interaction? I know friends that are stuck at home. Some of them have families. They still live online all night long, all day long. Their life is at least 50% social media. And because they're my friends, they want to talk to me throughout the day. And they don't empathetically think about my schedule at any point in time. My friends who know me in person, they sort of understand, well, I know a guy with his name, and we used to spend a lot of time together because our circles, you know, got it, you know, intertwined. But now I have to reach out if I want to hear his voice because he's so busy. It's just tough to get a hold of him. Now I'm constantly interacting with people, constantly. Part of it is what I like to do for a living. Part of it is because I integrated into my life a circle of friends that I go in a circle throughout the week. Different environments, different things. You know, one guy I marathon watch old sitcoms. The other ones I go and watch conspiracy videos and movies. Other people I go out to dinner with. The female, the males, I keep in check. Then I have my work associates that I work with. amazing peers that, you know, tax my brain constantly, use every single skill that I've got in the book. It's a blast, right? But what's funny is, I think people think that I'm ignoring them. They take offense because I don't engage in all the social media anymore. I've got 3 Facebook profiles. There's not a single post on any of them. I use one to manage this channel. I have an old one with all my professional associates in them. And I have my private one that's my closest friends. Some of you are on all 3 of them. I'm trying to pull you guys off the old ones onto the private one. But I have allowed myself at times to get very, very isolated. And it's sort of like, you know, we all have work and that's one thing. But, you know, Jesus, you can't go to work and have normal conversations anymore because of all the Me Too horse shit that's out there, right? There are people out there with true Me Too problems, and there's just people trying to milk the system. Oh, what did you say to me? Well, you know, that word you used, if I look up the etymology from 1822, that means something really hideous, and I'm going to take offense to it, and I'm going to try to get $1 million out of the company's insurance policies. That kind of crap is screwing up the world. Not sure how to fix that one. That's a different episode. Not sure how to fix it. Everyone's so strung out on it. It's become a part of our social fabric. The only hope that we have, I think, in my opinion, is that the next generation denies it and says, you know what, that's corny old crap that my dad used to do, my mom used to do. It's what my grandma and grandpa like. I don't want to have anything to do with that. I like going outside and have sun hit my face. I like to use a skateboard. I like roller skating rinks. I like going down to, local restaurant, convenience store. It's interesting when you go down to some of the more urban areas, you have people that hang out in front of the local liquor store or convenience store, both, right? Now, there's a lot of stereotypes about the folks that do that. You know, drug trades used to hang out at the same locations, but you know, way before drugs were a huge issue in this country, it was just the way you had conversations with the local people in the town. I think one of the easiest ways to fix this problem is to look back, if you're old enough, to your childhood. If you're, you know, maybe in your late 50s or even older, you're going to have 1,000 different examples of where you used to hang out to interact with other people. For those of you who are religious and go to church, I think that's a pretty good one. Hanging out with like-minded people makes it happen. For those of you who have clubs, little meetup.org sort of things, right? I'm involved with one of them here locally for electronics. I'm about to get into another one that's going to be about artificial intelligence. And we'll see. These are forming, budding. Well, one of them is forming. One of them's 3 years old. But no matter, you know, people come and go, so these things renew themselves, renew their own formats and et cetera, right? Like I said, when I was a kid, I was taken to a black rib joint on the east side of my town called Irma's. And, you know, my parents would hang out with Irma upstairs on the second floor, having conversations with her. My dad and I would hang out with Roy, who would cook the food outside in a big giant pit. I just was this little kid, man. I just listened to all the conversations. But there was a point where I got to stay downstairs in the billiard room and drink, you know, Coca-Cola out of these tiny little bottles, tiny little glass bottles, this old Coke machine right out of Fallout 3. I just sit and watch. I see these guys, you know, rib each other and all this other stuff. Then when I got a little bit older, there was, you know, the pool parlors. There were the bars, the bar pool parlors. People interacted. Yeah, sure. Some guys got in fist fights and beat the shit out of each other. You just kind of sit and watch and learn how to control yourself so you don't get in the same problem. When I was a kid, we had arcades, right? Go see the episode in season 1 if you dig arcades. It's a lot of fun. We used to hang out. It was just what you did. Remember when I was a kid, I was 9 years old. I was living in this apartment complex. It was 2-story buildings. I'm in the second floor. And I used to look out my window at night, especially in the summertime when you could just leave the window wide open. You kind of had to survive. And I'd look down on this playground that was meant for us as kids, but at night, these guys would back up this truck with the tailgate down, and they'd just have tailgate parties. And they weren't, you know, it was probably like they'd start around 10 o'clock. They'd probably drink till like 2 in the morning. And no one called the cops because they were polite. They just kind of talked. Every once in a while they'd laugh, but, you know, a comfortable laugh is not something anyone's going to complain about. But that's what they did. People used to go out and fish. Sit there on a nice little folding chair with your reel and your rod. Lie about what they caught last week. We hung out together. And the amount of wisdom that you transfer between two human beings is amazing. Using your mouth, right? I won't belabor it, but there's been experiments for years proving that primates transfer information without speaking, without any form of communication. They simply teach each other through being with each other, and it spreads like a virus. We do it too. It's pretty hard to learn an instrument completely by yourself. I mean, you can YouTube video all the hell you want, but when you need to ask a question that's not covered in the YouTube video, you are screwed. It's a good primer, but it's not the way to finish and polish out and become a professional. It just isn't. You need to ask questions. And that's when you need another human being. But social media has a separate side effect that is not so good. When you decide to post on social media, that is when the inner id and the inner psychoses of your mind kick into action. Why are you posting? And I mean anything, Instagram to Twitter to Facebook. What are you doing it for? I'll tell you why you do it. Because there's a few things, and almost every single post in the world falls under these categories, right? One of them is, look how much better my life is than yours. Post. A photograph. You happened to take your vacation and you went to Paris or something. And you just pound it into the minds of everyone around you. Now, everyone else is going to go someplace else at some point in time. So maybe you balance it out in your brain. But a lot of times it's a big, you know, show-off post. We're all guilty of this, okay? The other one is, someone loves me, post. Your boyfriend, your girlfriend, you're posting your personal interactions with your personal loved ones out for the entire world to consume. I'm not broken. See, this guy likes me. I'm not broken. See, this good-looking girl likes me. Does anyone really care? The other one is the bearing of bad news. People will post that someone died, a celebrity. They want to be the first person to break it to you. I don't know what they're proving. I watch the news all fucking day. I don't know what it is. But, you know, when someone dies, there's 50,000 posts online about that person dying. Perhaps it's a coping mechanism because they don't have any friends, right? When Prince died, you know, I think I told you guys the story. I was interviewing for a position at a really cool company, and I haven't even started the interview. My phone starts blowing up on this desk, and I was like, well, I'm not going to pay attention to that crap, even though there's a break going on between people talking to me. But it kept going and going and going, and I don't get that many texts in this world. And I was like, what the hell's going on? Maybe there's an emergency, right? Click on it, look inside. It's like 10 individual people. There must be like 23 posts in there. And one of my friends said, you could read the first line of it. You know, one of them says, can you believe it? And I read down the next one. It said, Prince died. And I was like, what? 57 years old? What the hell's going on there, right? I blew this interview with this one kid because he was so full of fucking shit. It was ridiculous. Next group of people, I did well, but I left. He had 50% veto on the interview. Didn't get the job. Didn't really give a shit. because of the day that I was having. And then I ended up spending the rest of the day on the phone talking to all my friends, right? Social media didn't solve it for me. Didn't bring peace to my soul. Talking to my friends who lived through these eras with me. One of my friends was very close to Prince personally, and he got me very close to Prince as well. I never met Prince, unfortunately, but I got 1 degree away or 2 degrees away from the guy. Ended up talking to him, and we're all just in shock, right? The other reason why you post is to say, I'm right and you were wrong. My political candidate's better than yours. Or the food that you choose is wrong, right? Does that bring anyone to the table? Ever? Not really. There'll be a few people that totally respect your opinion, and they might go, really? Is that bad? And you're like, yeah, I found out it's bad. Thought I would share it. So I don't think that social media as a whole, and perhaps it's because of our immaturity, is bringing out the very best in us. I think it's making us all look like a bunch of assholes. A bunch of children. The most sophisticated people I know don't post. It's interesting. They just don't do it. If they do, they're trying to share something beautiful, right? Of course, you get the other one that says, if you don't share this post to Jesus, you're an asshole. That's the other great one. Okay. So I don't want to post your thing onto my feed because I think it was annoying you did it in the first place. And now, what are you going to think of me, right? It's one of those jokes where you say, I posted this on my feed because you said if I didn't, I was a jerk, said no one ever, right? LinkedIn is another famous one. LinkedIn is a good way to probably stay in contact with your professional friends, but it's never going to lead to you getting a job, right? I hired you because of your amazing profile on LinkedIn, said no employer ever, right? But you get these blowhards on LinkedIn that just are these self-appointed authorities, and they just, I don't know, man, they just post articles and post their own stuff, and none of it's informative, none of it's interesting, none of it's profound. But that's what they're trying to accomplish. And this is the thing about social media that I think is hilarious. You'll have a person who's in their 60s behaving like a child in social media. And I don't mean child as in they're posting kitty cat videos all the time or whatever. No, I'm talking about trying to be something that they're not. Manifesting this notion. And it's not something it's not something I don't think that they really want to be in the first place, even if they achieve their goal. There is a way of pretending to be the person that you want to be, and then you'll be that. Prince said that himself. He said, look, I was very shy, wasn't very confident. And when I got on stage, I pretended to be that way. And eventually, over the course of 5 years or so, I realized I really could be that person. So he pretended his way into what he wanted to be. So there's a formula that can work there. I don't think you're going to achieve it through Facebook. The selfie is real interesting. It's probably the one I'm the most guilty of out of all the formulas. Taking a picture of yourself that you like, editing it, changing its color, changing whatever, and then posting it out there for the world to see. This is me. It can have its advantages, and I think its disadvantages. We all know there's a certain level of selfies, then it's different for every one of us, where we start to believe the other person's a narcissist. My God, what, do you just sit around taking pictures of yourself? Now, part of it could be that you're trying to reinvent yourself, and so selfies are very healthy for getting out there and looking at yourself and going, you know, I'm going to try my hair like this, I'm trying my hair like that, I'm going to wear clothes like this. I'm going to try these sunglasses, I'm going to try some smiling, smirking, not smiling, try to be funny in a photo. Some people are utterly shameless. I think it's phenomenal how they can do that. They post things I would never post to myself. I envy them. YouTube is very interesting because it has a sub-element of social media. They'll post a video online, and they want everyone to like it. And the second that someone doesn't like it, there's this knee-jerk butthurt, a real painful thing in the chest. And then they try to engage. Well, some people walk away because they realize this is just the way it works, right? I probably get thumbs down because it's too long. I probably get thumbs down because it's a black and white. I get thumbs down because I swear. I probably get thumbs down because I pick a particular subject where I like it and people hate it. It's just going to be the way it is. But some people will post stuff, very sort of, you know, polarizing topics, right? No politician in this day and age answers the question, what is your belief on abortion? Supreme Court justice people don't answer that question anymore because they instantaneously know they're going to fail to bring over the majority to their side. It's probably the most polarizing subject matter you could possibly get into. But people will take subjects, not that subject, but subjects just as polarizing and do videos on them. And when the world doesn't like them, oh my God, they will take one video and make 10 more videos trying to convince the world that they're not a bad person, that you should still like them. And it just feeds the trolls and they don't get it. They'll even be told by their closest friends, don't do it, don't do it, you're going to get more trolls. And they're just blind. They're just completely ignorant, if not stupid about it. And they just have to do this, you know, because they've never experienced dissent face to face, right? You know, some might argue that's healthy. That person needs to grow up. I wouldn't disagree. What happens when you build your circle of friends carefully? I have a episode on friendship, which doesn't get watched that much, but it's actually fairly important. A lot of details in it. But we tend to build circles around us that are positive, not negative. Anyone who's against you just needs to be filtered out. You can get to the point where you walk up to their face and you say, look, I don't think this is a healthy relationship that we have. Or you can just not call them back. You know, just don't make them feel bad about themselves. You just have a difference. It's something you can't reconcile. And so you just don't invite them. Shit happens, man. The thing is this. There's a big world out there and there's a big life to live. When you're on your deathbed, all of this shit's going to matter. In the end, what did you do with your life? Imagine you die. Put it this way. Imagine Facebook removes the 5,000 friend cap on your account. Why they give a shit how many friends you have, I don't understand. But let's say you had 1 million friends, 10 million subscribers on YouTube, that you haven't met a single soul in your lifetime. And you're on your deathbed, all this stuff is long gone, man. You lived a pretty good life, I guess, in terms of age. You didn't get hit by a bus, you didn't die of some acute illness. But you're dying alone because you never made a friend. Never even tried. Like, you never had them. A lot of us are going to probably die by ourselves. Who knows, right? Your spouse passes away a year before you do. Your kids, I don't know. They're just in a different part of the world. They came and saw you yesterday. They got to go back to work. And so you're going to be in that old folks home, whatever. And, you know, I've had two grandparents pass away completely by themselves. Two of the most wonderful women I've ever met in my life. They passed away by themselves. And there's really nothing that any of us could have done to have been there besides to have lived right next to them every single day. But when you go out, there's going to be a moment where you kind of surmise, what did I do with my life? Did I live it? Or did I perpetuate a facsimile of what it was all about? It's important, I think. YouTube has a distinct advantage because you can have much deeper experiences, in my opinion. We're really exchanging information. This whole awakening of 2018, which started a long time ago, has been facilitated by videos and audio. Podcasts, I don't know. I think very few people truly get deeply into podcasts. This show has about 270,000 views and some change. The podcast has And I haven't had the data from the very beginning, but, you know, the podcast is around 70,000. Okay, add 10 grand to that, you got 80,000. It's still, no matter how much you pad that thing, it's going to be half. So this is a powerful platform. It has a little bit more dimension. It comes with a lot less, I think, immediate psychoses, because it's not this hit and run thing. Social media is the pure social media. They're just hit and runs. You tweet, boom, you're gone. You Instagram, you're gone. You Facebook, you're gone. Human interaction is extremely, extremely important to your overall health. I don't think we have enough data to say, well, if you don't get human interaction, you literally stop functioning as a human being. I don't think that's true, necessarily. But if any of you've even remotely toiled with the notion of, you watch some post-apocalyptic show, Walking Dead, you see some movie like that where the world is sort of reset. And of course, when they write a story that's fictional, everyone has a partner and there's a story going on. But it could just as easily happen when you have no one. Everyone that you know isn't available. They're all dead. They're too scary to get next to. You just don't know. And you sit there and you think about it. There's something called cabin fever for a reason. You become stir crazy, as they say. Now, I personally believe that if you allow yourself to hear your inner voice, you can survive this kind of thing a lot longer than others. I used to have a friend of mine that would hike. He might still do it, but he hikes. And one of his things is, he says that people are just terrified to hear the voices inside their head. They're terrified of hearing their inner voice. And he said that he would take a hike and he'd see people wearing headsets hiking. And every once in a while he'd stop and he goes, why are you wearing a headset out here in nature? What's the point? And we're not talking about people jogging or something like that. He goes, you're in the most beautiful place in the world. But every time you go by with your headset on, no one's allowed to talk to you. Unless it's an emergency. You are negating the rest of the world from interfering with your little bubble. Now again, if you're running, you got a regiment, you got to get your miles in or whatever, a little bit different, but he's not talking about those people. His whole frustration was, why go out in nature if the only thing you're going to do is negate nature while you're at it? And that he had a great point. How many movies have you seen where there's only one character in the entire movie? All right, there's Castaway. There's a couple out of all the movies I've seen in my entire lifetime that even attempted to do that. If I took a script into Hollywood, I've got one that's actually a single dude. It will be the toughest script to write, and it will be the toughest script to ever pitch. It would have to be a crown achievement of my whole writing career, meaning I have to get at least, you know, three to four movies made that do really, really well. And then I submit this one at the last second, and I go, look, I'm 65 years old. I finally nailed this script with this one guy in it, the whole script, and you'll trust me with it because I deliver. And read it, of course, right? I want you guys to test out the theory of the Skyping. Skype with someone special, not just a random stranger. But you can test that out with a random stranger if you're fairly observant. But Skype with them and then hang out with them. In fact, just do it with your partner. Just say, we're going to do a little experiment. Do it with your parents. Just standing with them is huge. I go back to my, you know, high school reunion every 5 years. I guarantee you, I can chat with someone face-to-face on every single thing, Facebook chat, Skype, whatever. But when I see them in real life, it's magic. And nothing has to be said even. And, you know, my thing is to recognize that we're not built to be this way. You know this is true before you even clicked on the episode. Sometimes we have to make changes in our lives because it's time. You know, it's funny. The Lockup Show has a very interesting arc to it that happens, a theme that happens over and over. And you'll see someone who's strung out on alcohol or some sort of drug. And they will have been in a prison so many times that there's just a breaking point. It's what the psychologists always tell you. You can't make someone else change. They have to want to change themselves, right? So true. So amazing. But it's amazing they caught dozens and dozens of these turning points on camera within this series on Netflix. It's an amazing thing. It's super inspiring if you can usurp their strength and go, you know what? I'm not going to go down that path. If social media isn't starting to wane on you and isn't starting to get really fucking old right now, then you just recently crawled out from under a rock. It's stagnant. You know, I think in our Locked Facebook group, we do a pretty good job of actually sharing knowledge that is really valuable. And I think in that scenario, in a forum scenario, we're sharing all of our opinions, all of our ideas. I get enlightened several times a week for the stuff that's posted on there. Again, your comments on this channel, super duper enlightening. You guys, you know, if my knowledge is a tree that grows with different branches and little tiny mini branches and leaves, you guys are the bloodline in this tree, causing it to spawn and branch in every single direction constantly. It's like a mustard seed, man. So those forums still have some strength and some value. And what's funny is, I give an example. The amount of times I've had a personal conversation with, say, my girlfriend based on someone's home feed posts that has been a positive conversation. Hey, I saw this positive thing in my feed, and now I'm going to share a positive thing at dinner, and here goes the dinner, you know, here goes the conversation. It's been single percentage. Single percentage. But the amount of hours that I have had conversations with my girlfriend based on your posts in the comments section of YouTube or in the comments section of the Locked Facebook group is so vast, I couldn't possibly keep count. Only God knows how many hours I have pulled out due to those posts that you guys put on there. I'll sit there and read them. I'll sit there and cruise through them. And then she says this, and then he says that. It's huge. Your time in this world is infinitely valuable. You know me, I believe in reincarnation. I really do. Still, at no point in believing in reincarnation do I believe that I'm going to blow off my life. Nah, whatever. I'm coming back. This life is being sustained by forces that I think could be doing something else with their effort and time. I think each one of us are being sustained by the same force for a very good reason, of which we may never understand until we pass over. And someone goes, oh, that's the reason why you were there. And like, yeah, you know, I thought so. It was either that or this. You know? I don't know how enlightening Instagram is ever going to be. Or Twitter. Or Facebook. In its pure form. Its pure singular form of your posts to yourself, such that other people can see it. I don't know. When you get inside of a forum, what's nice is you're with people like yourself. If you got a flat earth thing, you're going to have another 10 people who believe the earth is flat as well. You could enjoy yourself and have conversations. And you know what? You know you're in a forum with people who believe it's round. And it's a friendly place because you're like, well, they leave me alone. I leave them alone. And we play checkers every once in a while, or dominoes. And we talk over the table like, well, you know, you're full of shit about this globe thing. You've never seen it from space. And they're like pushing their thing up going, well, you know, you're full of shit because you haven't flown over the South Pole. All this evidence you think you have, you've never proven that either. Touché, you both say. Well, I'm going to become an astronaut, see this shit from space, and you're going to become a G5 pilot, and you're going to fly that sumbitch over the South Pole, no matter if anyone likes it or not. That has value. That's interacting a little bit, at least. Make sure you go out and see real human beings and have real conversations. I know some people aren't huggy people. You know what's interesting about that? When you are a person who is, you know, even if you're doing the bro hugs, when you're like that, you will see people who aren't. And when you learn that they aren't, it's not a surprise. You're like, yeah, I could tell. He or she is stiff as a fucking board. Little inhuman, as a matter of fact. I think I've said this before, but at a smoke lounge, one of the things that's customary is to introduce yourself when you get to the smoke lounge. You ask everyone their name. You're shaking everyone's hand. And you tell them your name, right? And then you go get your cigar and you find a place to sit down. And you ease into whatever's happening in the room. If someone is playing a movie before you get in there, you know they're not going to change it to your favorite show on HBO. You're going to have to eat that movie if you don't like it. But what you're there for is a social interaction using something very mellowing, which is a cigar. I have lived, 31 years in California. A couple months, it'll be officially 31 years. Coming from, again, like I always say, the Midwest. When I first moved here, the first 3.5 years I spent here was with people, interacting with them, sharing my life with them, laughing. Then I moved to the Bay Area, big city, much bigger. 12 years. And see, out of 12, I probably spent, 8 years struggling with the native population. I was very, very fortunate because 3 of my friends from Southern California moved to Northern California. And then I imported a girlfriend from the Midwest out here. So I surrounded myself with people that understood the value of human interaction. And I was in video games, and one of the things that nerds understand better than everyone else is human interaction. You know, they're not into all the bullshit, faking who you are. They're not trying to post on anything how great their life is and how much it's better than you. They know they're just more human. I hate to say it. I mean, nerds are awesome people. True blue, man. Take their shirt off and put it on the ground so you don't have to get your feet wet kind of people. Then I moved back down here, further down, to Orange County, California. This is as Midwest as I've ever experienced anywhere in the world besides the Midwest. Amazing people. We watch each other's backs. We care about each other. We network. Oh, you do this? Well, let me hook you up with 10 people who need that. Boom, boom, boom. All that money in there. People are happy. People are bragging about what you can do. And you do the same for them. We just enjoy life. And there's a lot of places in the world that are just like that. So get out there and get it. You know, when Mark Zuckerberg went into the Senate hearing and said, among other things, that he gave away all of our data to, Cambridge Analytics, which is now since closed. But they're still sharing the data. They took, millions, tens of millions of posts and that were private and made them public. We got loyalty for that guy? Really? You're going to give that guy money by going in and giving him money? No, man. He also had to admit that his cell phone app listens to the room without your permission. I mean, yeah, you granted it access to use the microphone, but most of us perceive that as the need to actually use the microphone, right? I'm telling you I want to use my microphone to make a post, do a video. No. He bent the rules. He listens to the room. If you mention apple pie 20 times and you start seeing apple pie ads, you don't think everyone else is doing the same thing? You're crazy. In the real world, if someone screwed you over like that, you know, some places in the world we'd take old Mark out and beat the living shit out of the guy. Wouldn't kill him, but he certainly would remember it as he walked his fucking ass back home 2 or 3 miles in the dark. But online, they can do it to you and they can screw you. and they can go hide in their little fortresses up there in Mountain View, right? I think most of us realize with the truth movement, the game is to use their platform against them until it no longer exists, and then we'll find a way to finance our own platform. I can never move this show anywhere because all my episodes are over an hour, and almost every service, even if you pay money, won't let you go over an hour. Vimeo is a little expensive. I haven't been willing to get into that service. Now, let's say you're shy. Let's say you're really, really shy. You're like, God damn it, I like this episode. I believe what you're saying, but man, I got no people skills because I'm really, really shy. Okay. Here's your trick. The first element of the solution is to be with other people. Interacting with them, that's the bonus. That's the best part of it. But I tell you what, there are so many places here in Southern California where they have internet connections, restaurants, coffee shops, cigar lounges, as a matter of fact. We all have, you know, internet hubs wherever you go. Perhaps the first step is to merely get to these locations and sit with other people. And you're thinking, well, but I want to interact with them. Okay. The second formula to get that going, naturally. One, let me give you a little piece of advice from your Uncle Mark. Make yourself very presentable, okay? Don't go in there with your shitty clothes on to get your game going. Dress in your nice stuff. Get your hair did. Go and sit. Pick a place. Go to all the places and make sure you found the best place in your area. Okay? Place that feels most comfortable to you, because if you feel comfortable, you're going to be comfortable to other people. Maybe the Panera place isn't your kind of crowd. Maybe the Coffee Bean is your place, right? A couple little local joints we have in SoCal here. Find the one that works for you and go all the time when you need that interaction. Eventually, you'll become a regular and you're going to notice the other regulars. And eventually, you'll spend so much time with those people in the same room that eventually you're going to bump with them in the order line and getting a straw, getting some food. And maybe you're going to sit next to each other because on one particular Saturday afternoon, the place is packed, and you'll make a little comment next to them, and they'll make a comment to you, and you'll start practicing. They'll start growing on you. And you'll probably find out you're damn good at it. Now, if you're a dude, we're in the Me Too era, guys. Be very careful just walking up to ladies and going, hi, you want to have a 10-minute conversation? You don't even know me? That might get you a little bit of a creepy card there. Just let it happen. Make them feel familiar with you. If it's somebody who came one time, hey, if they want to talk to you, they'll let you know. They'll look at you all night long. Make sure looking at you with inviting eyes and not looking at you like, oh my God, you're going to kill me. Don't follow them outside. If you can sing, go do karaoke or something, right? That's a really fun way. I've seen people come in that are single and they go up there and they just nail karaoke, and the whole place goes crazy. And as they try to walk back to wherever they're standing in the room, they're just getting high fives. People come up to them saying, you are amazing. That's another way to break the seal. You'll find out even people that can't sing get high fives too, because everyone knows what's going on. The person's trying. There's no need for us to shit on their parade. Maybe they get better, maybe they don't. But they went up there and they put their heart and soul in it. And so we reward that. But the other one is to maintain your empathy. It's really, really good for any form of decision you make to interact with someone. Empathetically put yourself in their shoes. Do they look like they want to interact with you? A lot of times some pretty awkward shit happens when you don't read someone well and you go up to say hi and they're just like, get away from me, you know, in some way, shape, or form. They communicate that kind of sentiment to you. Observe. It'll help you calculate your move a hell of a lot better. One of the tricks of interacting, since we're sort of past the concept of human interaction being good, is that you'll find that everyone likes to tell you about their opinions of things. It's a cheap trick. It is a total cheap trick, man. Get in a conversation where you ask people their opinions about things. Say you're at a restaurant, and you could be standing in line, and you go, what's good here? What's good food here? And maybe they haven't been there at all. And so they go, man, I don't know. I haven't been here. And then you say, well, geez, I haven't been here either. That looks pretty good. Yeah, I don't know. What are you going to get? You know, you start having a conversation. And if they do know, they're like, oh, man, the spaghetti bolognese is amazing. Well, it's got mushroom option on. Is that any good? Yeah, that's really good, too. Okay. Thank you very much for that. Great. We're all trying to hive mind online, aren't we? You watch these videos and you're like, man, this dude thinks the way I think. That's why I keep coming back. There's no other reason to come back. Same thing happens in real life. How fast do you think we can hive mind in person? I'm going to suggest that science proves really fast. Way faster than online. How many of you guys have watched one of my episodes and you thought to yourself, Jesus, right when the credits rolled at the end, I want to have a 3-hour conversation with this dude about that subject because there's so much more to talk about. I want to share my stories with this person. You're just chomping at the bit to interact. And you need to know I would probably enjoy it too. This is what we have right now, right? The world is a wonderful place. Don't skip it. Don't miss it. You'll hear that saying, and you'll see it all the time in public, where you see people that, you know, in your opinion, and my opinion too, you think, oh my gosh, these two people, male, female, whatever, maybe they're really awkward according to our personal standards of the way a person should look, whatever. We're judging the book by the cover, of course, shame on us, but it happens. But you see them in love with someone. It's just like them, like the female version of the dude. And you're like, holy shit, that's wild. There really is someone for everyone. I am a total believer in that. There's someone for everyone. Well, that's in a love paradigm, right? I will tell you that there is someone for everyone in a conversational paradigm, in an interactive paradigm. Seriously, I'm late to the game with the meetup.org thing. Man, there's an app for that, just so you know. But you go on the website in your local area, and you will find that there's some hobby either that you are engaging in your personal life that you think no one else does this, and you want to meet other people that do it. There's something that'll happen once a month or once every 2 months or whatever in your area. Doesn't that sound cool? Go to it. You know, it might be a sausage fest for most guys, but at least it's something, right? Maybe you'll learn something. Maybe you'll teach something. If your job isolates you, maybe think about a change. And most of the time, you won't have to change the organization. You just need to change what you do. Get in front of people more often. Get into some administrative position where you can at least work with employees. Go work in a group instead of by yourself. Some of you have really busy homes, and so you like the isolation at work. Some of you go home alone, so you want your work to have more interaction. Either way, you balance it. You figure out what you need. And I'm going to close this with an example that I have mentioned 2 or 3 times in different episodes. I think it's a great closer on this, which is the game called The Sims, made by Will Wright. Will Wright was one of the pioneers of video games in the 80s on computers. He made SimCity. Genius. But he made a game called The Sims. And The Sims had this situation where at first you're managing people inside of a little home. And, you know, like you rotate the camera and the walls disappear, you know, so you can see your character at all times. And they had this social gauge on the character. And the character, you know, if you had it full, social gauge would be green. If you didn't socialize with someone, it would go down to 0, and then it would go up in red. I think this is the way it worked. it was rather confusing for me at the beginning because there was a point when I would tell my character who had to go to the restroom, and they wouldn't do it. Sometimes they would just pee their pants standing in the room. They wouldn't do anything I said. Sometimes they'd get on the ground and just cry. The point of this was Will Wright had figured out, I don't know, by talking to a psychologist or whatever, but he dramatized it so abruptly in the game that I don't think that, I think there's probably very few human beings on Earth that would know that it would have such a debilitating effect. But if your character didn't talk to someone else, literally talk, dance, joke, whatever, they would shut down completely, even to the extent of not going to the bathroom, to the extent of wetting themselves, to the extent of just collapsing on the ground and saying, nope, you got to get me to someone else. And the problem was you get them so messed up they couldn't even make the phone call to bring anyone over. Eventually they expanded the game and you can move them around the neighborhood. But that's how important it is. It really is that important. So I want you to take inventory of your happiness. If you are happy, truly happy, don't worry about any of this crap. This is not some imperative. I'm telling you what makes you happy and you got to go do it. Please don't interpret it like that. But if you feel like there's a hole, get out there and interact. The phone's pretty good. It's probably your first stage of real true interaction. And maybe Skype and that kind of thing. But I think you need to get out there in public somewhere. Go see your family members. Go see your buddy. Your bestie. How many times has someone invited you to an event and you sat at your house going, oh my God, I really just feel like being at home tonight. But for whatever reason, you went anyway. And by the time you got home, you're like, that was awesome. That was exactly what I needed. Well, that's it, man. That's the Holy Grail. You have sipped from the chalice, from the palace, as Danny Kaye would say. I think you feel me. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. There's audio, video, a locked Facebook group, a Patreon page, a store, and that's all you need to know. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.